Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and thanks for joining me today. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And as always, I'm so glad you're here with me. We have another fantastic conversation in store for you. And this is a program really designed to empower you with truthful information so you can make informed decisions regarding your health and well-being. I want to tell everyone, I just returned from a one-week retreat with Gary Null in Texas, and I was really very privileged to be there. I did several lectures over the week and just experiencing the amazing miracles of healing that happened there. This is the first retreat I went to with Gary. I think he's planning one more in January. But I have to say, I've been listening to testimonials over the year or two, and I just was always impressed with what I heard. But when you see it for yourself, it's profound. And in the 2 weeks of his retreat, I was there for the last week, but in the first week, there was a woman, a young woman, 23 years old, who arrived with really chronic MS. And she was so debilitated, she could hardly get up and do anything. She was exhausted. And by the end of the 2 weeks, she actually ran, or I would say power walked, 26 miles, having never trained. I mean, she couldn't even, you know, just walking a block would get her exhausted. And that was pretty phenomenal. And there was another gentleman who had suffered for the last 5 years with COPD. He couldn't breathe. His lungs were so shut down, he could hardly take a breath. And amazing healings happened for him over the 2 weeks he was there. And he used to be a long-distance runner, and he hasn't been running. Both his brothers died of COPD. And by the end of the 2 weeks, he did a 27-mile power walk, and his lungs just opened up. It was just phenomenal to see these changes. And one other person I wanted to share with you was a woman who was showing signs of dementia. Alzheimer's was in her family, and she came, and her gait was affected, her memory, her ability to communicate was affected. You could see some of these symptoms. And again, after one week, she totally changed. She walked 3 miles, power walk 3 miles every day. Her brain fog lifted. She was coherent. Her memory returned. It was so amazing, so impressive. So it just reminds me what's possible when we are in an environment where we are supported with clean air, clean food, clean water, lots of love, and some very special people technologies that were available, how quickly the body can heal. So I just want to share that with you, and hopefully that will inspire you to make the changes you need to make, because the body can shift in an incredible, you know, small amount of time for healing to happen. So if you ever get a chance to do a retreat, either with Gary or somewhere else, that will just change your environment, bring you back into nature, eating clean food, positive people, positive experiences, go for it, because it can truly change your health and change your life. And we're going to talk about changing your health and changing your life today. I invited Kiran Krishnan back a couple of weeks ago. I think about 3 weeks ago, I interviewed Kiran on my show. We talked about a revolution for healing your gut microbiome. And we're going to do part two of a revolution for healing your gut biome, because there was so much interest and such a response. And this is a product that I personally am so excited about, and there's so much to be said about it, that I wanted Kiran to continue this conversation, because healing our gut microbiome really is the key to healing our body from whatever. And that's what we're going to explore in today's conversation. I want to share a little bit about Kiran again. So this is Kiran's very impressive bio. Kiran is a research microbiologist whose focus is the human microbiome and wellness. with his particular expertise in the newest frontier in microbiology, gut commensal spore bacteria. Kieran is a frequent lecturer, largely to national and international medical audiences, but also is an expert guest on live radio and satellite podcasts. Coming from a strict research background in the fields of molecular medicine and microbiology at the University of Iowa, over the past 17 years, Kieran has conducted dozens of human clinical trials in human nutrition through the clinical research organization he established. In addition to his recently published groundbreaking leaky gut study showing reversal of gut enteropathy within 30 days, Kieran is currently involved in nine other ongoing human clinical trials testing the effect of gut commensal spore biotics on such conditions such as AIDS, HIV, gut enteropathy, thyroid and Hashimoto's condition, irritable bowel syndrome, and liver failure, as well as longer, more extensive leaky gut trials. So this is a fascinating topic. It's profound. It's one of the root cause issues that we need to address to support and generate health, no matter how it, you know, our health challenges may manifest, and that's why we're going to be talking about this revolution for healing your gut microbiome, part two. So, Kieran Christian, thank you so much for returning and being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. I was excited when you asked me to come on again, because I love the work that you do, and just listening, you know, to your mention about the retreat, that kind of stuff is so powerful. It's amazing, right? What the human body can achieve if we just put it in the right condition. That's really the key.
Yes, it was like, you know, you want to say it's a miracle, but it's really not a miracle. It's just giving the body everything that's required so the cells can work optimally again. And that's what we don't do. So many of the people on this retreat came from New York City, so you can imagine what it's like to be living
right.
in New York City, right? It's so intense and,
oh my God,
and polluted
yeah.
and, you know, stressed out. And to be in a beautiful environment with gardens all around and peacocks walking around and beautiful food, it was like nourishing on the very essence of your being for that week or two. Yeah. So,
absolutely. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So, and I was telling everybody about the Megaspore Biotics when I was there. I just felt that in the lectures I was doing about health and hormones and rejuvenation, regeneration, that this was such a missing piece. So people really got excited about what I was sharing about the Megaspore Biotics as being so fundamental. And I want us
Excellent.
To continue to the conversation because there was so much more we didn't get to cover in our first conversation.
Yeah.
It's such a huge topic, right? It's just so many
It is.
Facets.
Oh, my God,
so
yes.
many facets. So I thought maybe we can begin today talking about hormones on your gut microbiome and the impact of some of the synthetic hormones found in the pill and HRT and the impact they have on our healthy gut microbiome and more about how our gut microbiome is intimately connected to hormone production in our body. So how about we jump off there?
Yeah, perfect. I love it. You know, so one of the things that people really don't think about as much as they need to are the xenoestrogens. So these are the synthetic compounds that can mimic estrogen. And, of course, the phytoestrogens as well, which are the natural compounds that come from plant sources that can also mimic estrogen within the body. And the problem with that is, you know, not only does it kind of give the body an artificial exposure to estrogen, but one of the things that is not really realized until, and this is just in the last couple of years, is that the microbiome actually utilizes estrogen in a metabolic way, right? So it can metabolize natural estrogen produced by the female body in a way that actually supports the development of other hormones as well, you know. So another important thing is like, you know, we take like estradiol, right? We know that estrone and estradiol are problematic if they're in high levels. And as it turns out, there's a type of bacteria in the gut called Argobacterium that basically can metabolize estradiol and estrone into estriol, which we know is a more favorable version. And that version gives you the benefits of estrogen without the complications of too much estrogen burden. And so, you know, and without the risk of the estrogen-based cancers. And so the microbiome has the ability to convert those, and it does that because it can metabolize these hormones. And there's evidence that shows that the production of these hormones by our own body and our own endocrine system was learned by our own system learned it from microbes within our gut. So not only can they produce these hormones, but they also, of course, then metabolize them. So being able to look at things like atrazine, which is a weed killer commonly used, BHA, which is another food preservative that's typically used, the FD&C red number 3, all of these kind of FD&C colorings, BPA, DDT, all of these things are really powerful xenoestrogens that, of course, not only then create an artificial and harmful estrogen load in the body, but then it also disrupts the microbes that are designed to utilize estrogen in the body for metabolism. So it causes not only a hormone imbalance, but it causes a dysbiosis that will then cause a further imbalance in other hormones because these bacteria that it's causing a problem with are required for the production of other hormones.
Well, I bet people don't really think about our gut microbiome as having a role with hormonal balance. And if we disrupt a healthy gut microbiome, we actually are creating these hormonal imbalances. And if you can't convert into the estriol, which is the weakest one, you can actually increase your estrogen levels in your body and lead to what we call estrogen dominance, which is really the big problem happening right now in our culture. It's not a deficiency of estrogen in women and men. I think we need to keep men in the loop here. But it also is becoming, then it becomes a risk factor for hormone-dependent cancers, be it breast cancer or prostate cancer for men.
Absolutely, yeah. And that conversion that's so important is done by bacteria, done by Argobacterium as one of the types of bacteria that does it. But then when we introduce these synthetic estrogens into our system through consumer products, it actually messes up those bacteria.
But tell us more about how it affects our hormone levels, how it messes up our hormones, Karen.
Yeah, so, you know, as it turns out, the production of hormones in the body is a cascading effect, meaning once you disrupt hormone metabolism by disrupting the gut microbiome, you not only impact that particular hormone, in the case we were talking about earlier of estrogen, you also then subsequently mess up other hormone metabolisms as well. So a great example of that is, if we can follow this cascade a little bit. Let's say we introduce too many xenoestrogens and phytoestrogens in our system. We're using consumer products that have high levels of things like BPA in it or BHA and all these kind of chemicals that act as xenoestrogens. They come into the body and then they disrupt the bacteria whose job it is to metabolize estrogen naturally and convert things like estradiol and estrone into estriol, which is the more beneficial version. And then you end up leading to estrogen dominance. Now, the thing is, when those xenoestrogens and all come in and disrupt that bacteria, it also disrupts the diversity of the microbiome and the ability of the microbiome to metabolize other hormones. For example, TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone. Thyroid-stimulating hormone requires a diverse microbiome to actually break it down and metabolize it as well, similar to estrogen. So when you have a weak or disrupted microbiome, you end up with more TSH in your system, which then leads to signs of hyperthyroidism. And we know that hyperthyroidism leads to issues like, you know, low sex drive and headache and numerous issues like anxiety, rapid heartbeat, weight issues, and so on. And the other thing that it then disrupts is oxytocin production. And oxytocin is a really important love hormone. It's the one that gives
that feeling of human binding, you know, being bound to other humans, having that ability to connect and have that relationship with other humans, and that feeling of a sense of belonging, sense of purpose. And oxytocin also dramatically reduces stress in people. So there was a great study that was done that looked at oxytocin changes when you do oil-based massage, for example. And that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big fan of massage, because they showed that even 30 minutes of using an oil, getting an oil-based massage, increases the favorable oxytocin levels by over 30%. And that dramatically decreases stress hormones by over 25% in just 30 minutes. And so that has a huge increase in the way your body is functioning, of course, in the way you feel and so on. So, you know, these xenoestrogens and phytoestrogens, they're somewhat overlooked, and you would never think that, you know, being exposed to enough phytoestrogens, like things like soy, lignans, or even flax and sesame, having too much of those can act like phytoestrogens, can cause a problem with your thyroid, right? But it can, because of this cascading effect of hormone metabolism in the body.
And do the phytoestrogens have an adverse effect on the microbiome?
Yes, because, you know, because the microbiome actually uses hormones like estrogen to for its own metabolic capability, and then it metabolizes them, meaning it actually digests these hormones and produces other metabolites in the digestion, which then feeds other bacteria and helps them perform their functions. Now, you know, when you take that away, or when you disrupt that by adding in a chemical mimicry of that, which is through the phytoestrogens or xenoestrogens, then you will disrupt that family of bacteria that exists purely to do those things naturally in your body.
Well, that's such an interesting thought. I never realized that, first of all, the gut microbiome plays such a major role in the metabolism of hormones, be it estrogens or oxytocin, hormones like that, or TSH. I mean, that's profound when you realize how much our hormonal balance depends on a healthy gut microbiome and what we're doing to destroy a healthy gut microbiome. Yeah, I also heard some information this week that we have a microbiome in our brain.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're finding out more and more. Like, the eye has a microbiome. You know, we always thought that there were certain parts of the body that were completely sterile, that could not contain bacteria, because if bacteria were there, it would cause a problem like an infection. But as it turns out, we are not sterile. Our cerebral spinal fluid contains a bunch of bacteria, contains loads of viruses. There was a recent study that I saw presented at a conference I was in that showed that the cerebral spinal fluid of most people that they tested had herpes virus in it, and, you know, papilloma virus, and loads of bacteria, and so on. So we are microbes, you know, and that's the part that we really have to gather, is that we are a microbial ecology, really. And the ecology component to it is really important, because when we talk about an ecology, we talk about the health of the collective. And if we do one or two things to disrupt an aspect of the collective, it disrupts the whole thing. So a great example of that is I was at a microbiome conference at UCLA, and one of the researchers was presenting his findings, and this is a researcher out of Princeton, where they were doing the impact of the use of antibiotics on the microbiome. So they were testing Cipro, and they were testing, I think, amoxicillin. And what they were able to show is that when they took the average microbiome as a whole and then they dosed the antibiotic into it, within the first 12 hours, 99.99% of the bacteria died off. So a single dose of the antibiotic killed off 99.99% of all the bacteria, right? But then within about 24 hours, most of the bacteria kind of bounced back at varying proportions at that point. But well, here's what was so interesting about that is when they took the antibiotic and they took each bacteria individually, each bacterial species individually in that collective, they found that the vast majority of the bacteria in the collective were actually resistant to the antibiotic. So then the question is, how is it that the antibiotic killed off virtually 99.99% of all the bacteria when it was administered to the microbiome? And yet when you test each individual bacteria, they are all resistant to the antibiotic. And the reason is because that antibiotic disrupted one or two species in the collection, and that disruption was enough to destroy the entire collective. And so that's the part we don't think about enough. You know, we don't think about how just a single xenoestrogen from a household product or from a personal care product will not only create a disruption in estrogen metabolism, which may then lead to estrogen dominance, but because it's messing up the microbiome, it's also going to create an issue with metabolizing thyroid-stimulating hormone. It's going to create a disruption in production of oxytocin. It's also going to create a disruption in the production of things like GABA, which is a very important, hormone produced to increase the parasympathetic, to give your body the ability to relax, and calm down, also increase the production disrupt the production of BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is responsible for increasing the synthesis of neurons so that it can improve thinking and learning and memory function. It can, even mess up 5-HTP, which then ends up producing serotonin, which is your happy hormone. So one, significant disruption will create a cascading effect that then also leads to a cascade of symptoms that people know about, right? How often is it when you have hormone disruption that you also have disruption in your sleep, you have disruption in your mood, you have disruption in your metabolism, you have disruption in how your skin looks? All of those things aren't because of one hormone. It's because of the collection and the cascading effect of disrupting numerous hormones with one cause.
It's just so mind-blowing when you realize how our gut microbiome is the master director of just about all our systems and functions. We are like walking we transport our microbiome. We carry it around, let it visit places. But actually, we are run by these bacteria. They're in charge, really, of our ability to function.
Absolutely, we can't get too full of ourselves and think that we're these sophisticated human beings. You know, we are merely a vessel for these bacteria. That's all we are. If we're smart enough to put our bodies in an environment that's conducive to the growth of the good bacteria, we will be perfectly healthy and fine. If we're not smart enough to do that, if we expose ourselves to things that are known to disrupt the ecology of important bacteria in the body, we will have disease. And it really comes down to that.
So what we really need to understand is creating a healthy gut microbiome is number one. It's foundational.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're talking about hormones or whether you're talking about moods or sleep or autoimmune conditions from a leaky gut, which we'll get into in a minute. I mean, everything is dependent on a healthy gut microbiome. I want to go back to that study that wiped out 99% of all the bacteria in the gut. Is that what that
mm-hmm.
study showed? And those that survived,
mm-hmm.
And recolonized were antibiotic resistant. So what does that mean in terms of the future of the exposure to another antibiotic or down the track? I mean, are they not going to respond? Is that why we're creating antibiotic resistance to such a degree?
That is in part a major problem. The other part is just the bacteria that end up coming back in a higher proportion tend to be less favorable bacteria generally. And so what we're doing is with more and more courses of antibiotics, we end up creating this ecology in our gut that is not supportive of our healthy function. it's a dysbiotic flora, and you know, and so the issue is then when you have subsequent rounds of antibiotics, you further tilt the you know, into the favor of the unfavorable organisms.
Right.
And so it's a continuous disruption of your ecology, and your gut bacteria, as great as they are, they keep trying to bounce back, but the more we hit them with these negative impacts, and the more dysbiotic will become, and the harder it becomes to reverse that. And that's where we're starting to see the serious issues. And of course, you know, developing antibiotic resistance is an issue as well. But the big important thing is that, you know, we will disrupt the ecology of the gut so far that, you know, it can't recover, or it won't recover, and then you'll have all of these other chronic illnesses that come as a consequence of that.
So let's go back to the beginning and talk about the unique type of microorganisms that are part of the spore biotic formula. And when we talk about the gut microbiome, we've so much talked about taking probiotics to heal the gut, or taking glutamine to heal the gut, or taking colostrum to heal the gut. And all these things are ways to support healing the gut and sealing the gut and restoring a healthy gut microbiome. But there's a really exceptional way that we can do that with the spore biotics. So let's go back and talk about that.
Yeah, so what was fascinating to me when we first discovered these particular spores, and we were starting to see the kinds of things they can do within the system, we were baffled that, you know what, nature has created this for us, nature has put it here on Earth. We just have to be just smart enough to capture them and put them into our system. Right. And if we can do that, they will resolve so many issues that we have currently. Well, what's so great about these particular types of probiotic strains is that they're designed by nature to be gut reconditioning organisms, meaning they can actually get into our system. They can read the microbial environment using something called quorum sensing. And then they can actually find overgrown and pathogenic bacteria, the ones that are causing disease, the ones that are breaking down the system, not allowing our system to function properly. And they will sit next to those bacteria. They'll produce up to 25 different antibiotics in that space to kill off those bad bacteria. You know, and then at the same time, they're going to take the food that you eat, and they will convert them into prebiotic type compounds to increase the growth of your good bacteria. So they go in there and they completely shift that imbalance. And that's the imbalance that's being caused by basically everything in our environment, you know, starting with our drinking water, the chlorine and the fluoride in our drinking water, the, you know, pesticides and weed killers and preservatives in our foods, the antibiotic courses we've talked about, all of those xeno and phytoestrogens in food products and, of course, in consumer health products. And also in consumer goods like, you know, body washes and lotions and makeup and all that kind of stuff that contains all that. And so everything that surrounds us is almost perfectly designed to destroy good bacteria within our system. And that's the environment we've put ourselves in. And here are these microbes designed by nature to be able to go in and reverse that damage. And when you can reverse that damage, you see some phenomenal changes happening in the body.
Well, you know, it's like these little intelligent beings, aren't they? I mean, if they can go in and mm-hmm. and kind of gang up on these adverse microorganisms, the pathogenic ones, and destroy them, create an antibiotic, whatever they're creating, to bring harmony back into the whole community, that's very intelligent, don't you think?
It is, and it's an interesting intelligence that's been derived through thousands of years of evolution. You know, and I often had asked myself when I first started working with these strains, how is it that they know, you know, what the gut is supposed to look like? Because they seem to be able to get in, and then reshape the gut to fix the imbalance of good and bad bacteria. My question was, how do they know what the gut is supposed to look like to, in order to fix it? Well, as it turns out, there's a significant number of studies that show that these particular strains were highly abundant in the natural environment throughout the course of human evolution. So our ancestors inadvertently ate them, you know, because they're found in the dirt, they're found in rivers and streams, they're found on vegetation, you know, on fruits and berries and roots and tubers. And so our ancestors who, you know, were smart enough to eat dirt and didn't sterilize everything they ate, got a huge dose of these particular types of bacteria on a regular basis. And because they got that huge dose, these bacteria were constantly moving through the human system. And we developed this wonderful symbiotic relationship with them where we say, hey, we'll provide you a home in our digestive tract, but you've got to come in and clean up that home for us. And so, and that's the relationship we've developed. So they've developed this amazing innate capability of actually fixing our gut environment, but they've done that through just thousands and thousands of years of coevolution between humans and these particular species.
And we need to, you know, emphasize that these are a special strain of probiotics, which are not really a part of the normal probiotic formulas that are out there on the market.
Right. You won't find them in 99.999% of probiotic formulas out there. You know, where you will find them is if you, let's say you were in France and you got sick with dysentery or gut infection and you go to the hospital there, you're just as likely to get these probiotics as a prescription and antibiotics. So they've been using these strains in Europe, in Latin America, in Asia for over 60 years as prescription drugs. You know, so they've been harnessing and utilizing the power of these strains for a long time, you know, we're just now coming to understand them here in the States.
Well, so we're slow to come to the party, as far as using
exactly.
These particular strains, right? You know, a friend of mine was telling me that she had a relative in Mass General. So, you know, it's a major mm-hmm. teaching hospital for Harvard, and they had him on loads and loads of antibiotics and did not give him one prescription for a probiotic, even a normal
wow.
probiotic. Not, didn't even acknowledge it when she said something to the doctors. They thought she was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a shame. Backwards we still are, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's crazy because, you know, That course of antibiotics is, you know, although it is important likely at that moment, assuming that what they're treating is an actual bacterial infection, not something else. But it sets off the body for further damage by other conditions down the road. And it can be easily prevented if they just utilize a probiotic along with it, and especially one that works in the presence of antibiotics and can heal the kind of damages that that occur when you take an antibiotic.
So that leads me to the next question. If someone is on antibiotics or taking hormones, either the pill or HRT, even bioidentical hormones, or taking steroids, which have the same effect, I believe, as antibiotics on the gut microbiome,
mm-hmm.
what is the correct way to address the damage that's being done while you're on those drugs? Should you be taking a probiotic during at the same time you're on antibiotic, or wait until you've finished the course, or what? What do you recommend?
Yeah, we always recommend with the spore probiotics to actually take them during the course of antibiotics. In fact, one of the studies that we completed is a liver failure study, and these patients are taking Xifaxan, which is a very powerful antibiotic, one that is particularly powerful in the gut, which means it kills off a lot of bacteria in the gut. And they were taking the probiotic along with the antibiotic basically at the same time, and we saw a significant improvement in some of the metabolic parameters like ammonia levels within the gut and in the blood and so on. So the probiotic had been shown to work just as well when taken with the antibiotic And that's the time where the gut really needs help. You know, once the antibiotic gets in, usually within about 3.5 hours, it's finished with the gut and it moves on. It gets absorbed into the circulatory system. But during those few hours, it's really destroying a lot of bacteria. And then over the next, 24 hours, when the bacteria start to bounce back, the ones that come back tend to be more problematic and pathogenic. So we want the spores in the system at that point. So
gotcha.
I always tell people, take it with your antibiotic and then make sure you're taking it for at least 3 times as long as you've taken the course of antibiotics. So let's say you took the antibiotics for 7 days. You want to take the spore-based probiotic at least for 21 days. After that, if you're someone that's for some reason not planning on taking it on a regular basis.
My next question, in following through this theme we're discussing here, has to do with people who are on either chemo, some sort of chemotherapy,
mm-hmm.
or even radiation therapy, and the impact, because those drugs and the radiation must all have extremely adverse effects on the microbiome.
Right, absolutely. In fact, there's a couple, like hospitals in the Chicagoland area, where they use the spores as a treatment for antibiotic chemo-associated diarrhea. And chemo causes a condition called enteropathy, which can make the gut very leaky. Of course, it gives you diarrhea. It can make it, very difficult to absorb nutrients. So it becomes really important to try to, support a healthier function of the gut during that period of time.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm just going, oh, my God, the consequences of taking a chemotherapy drug, if it makes the gut leaky, if it destroys a healthy microbiome, which is affecting a healthy immune system and creating more inflammatory reactions throughout the body, is countering whatever effect supposedly that chemotherapy is trying to achieve. It's just weakening the body even further.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It makes the body more susceptible to further complications and further issues. Now, I would never tell anyone who has a cancer diagnosis, don't do your chemotherapy. But of course, what you want to do after the chemotherapy is to really focus on rebuilding those basic systems in the body. And that starts with rebuilding the microbiome, rebuilding the gut lining, and then, of course, rebuilding the gut, the immune system that's controlled by the gut microbiome and the lining, because that will then reduce your susceptibility to a whole host of other conditions that come as a result of having gone through chemotherapy.
Would it be wise to take the spore probiotics during the chemotherapy treatment?
Yeah, that's how they're being used right now. So you take it during the chemotherapy treatment, and it helps with the issue, and it helps with the issue of the diarrhea and the inflammation in the gut. But of course, once you get through chemotherapy and hopefully the cancer's under control, then the big thing becomes, okay, how do we fix the damage to the gut lining? The spores play a huge role in that, but you also want to start increasing the diversity of your diet. You want to start adding specific prebiotics. You want to start improving the antioxidant capability of your system. And there's a few things that you can do. I would always suggest intermittent fasting. There's a lot of different things that need to be done to rebuild that whole gut immune axis and the digestive system, so that you can also, and just for the on the most basic level, absorb nutrients again, because that's one of the effects that happens once your gut is decimated by the chemo, is that you basically start really diminishing your ability to absorb nutrients into your system. So we got to fix that as well.
And what about radiation? Does the free radical damage that comes from exposure to radiation also compromise your gut microbiome?
I have seen that, of course, the radiation will compromise the mitochondria in many different cells. And mitochondria is basically the energy, the powerhouse of the cell. And
And you need the microbiome to reestablish and help fix those damaged mitochondria. I haven't seen data that shows that radiation specifically disrupts the microbiome itself. And certainly if it's targeted radiation, you know, nowadays you can, if you've got a tumor in your neck, then you can try to focus the radiation right in the neck. And so those kind of treatments, I haven't seen good credible data to show that it decimates the microbiome in general, like chemo does, but it does disrupt the mitochondria in your cells, which can present prolonged issues, and the microbiome can really help fix the mitochondria side too.
So maybe that's another point we can explore, the role of the microbiome in helping your mitochondria to recover, to function, to generate the energy necessary to support healthy functions in the body.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what's interesting about mitochondria is they are really the ancient bacteria. So when bacteria started on this earth, somewhere around 4 billion years ago, it basically started as a single mitochondria, just floating around in the primordial soup, as we call it. And so, you know, as more and more cells got together, they started incorporating these mitochondria into the cells, and then the mitochondria became kind of the engine of the cells and started powering the cells. And so the human system is really made up of multi-cells with mitochondria in them, and each of these mitochondria really represent ancient bacteria that we were able to capture and put inside ourselves, if you will. So the mitochondria are extremely important because the moment the mitochondria starts to get choked up and the moment the mitochondria start to die, then the tissue that the mitochondria makes up, the cells, start to die as well. And that's what happens in the process of aging. That's what happens in any kind of degenerative disease where either your neurons are dying or your heart cells are dying or your liver or kidney cells are dying, or in case of cosmetic things that we notice, like your skin cells are dying, you know, and so you lose the appearance of the skin. All of those things are caused by disruption of the mitochondria. And the mitochondria are interesting because our microbiome produces several really important compounds that propagate the health of our mitochondria overall. And without the microbiome producing these things, our mitochondria, the engines of our cell, would start to die off faster and faster. And so it becomes really important to understand this microbiome-mitochondria axis. So that's the connection between the microbiome and the mitochondria. So the mitochondria, or the microbiome, produces a few key things that are really important to the mitochondria, and that one of those things are short-chain fatty acids, you know, things like butyrate. Butyrate is the primary fuel for mitochondria, for example, in your intestinal lining. Especially in your large bowel, but it's also a primary fuel for numerous cells throughout the body. And without adequate butyrate, your cells aren't simply going to function the way they're supposed to. They just don't have the fuel. You know, mitochondria also produce something called urolithins. So it takes in compounds that are coming from the diet and produces urolithins, which then act as really important energy reservoirs within the mitochondria itself. They also increase something called mitophagy, which is the removal and the regeneration of dead and dying mitochondria. So as the mitochondria get weak over time, these urolithins allow those weak and dead and dying mitochondria to be removed and then produce new mitochondria in its place. So imagine, you know, your cell is a car, and you're driving the car around for, you know, 300,000 miles. And finally, the engine of that car starts to get weak and worn out. And either you don't do anything about it, and you just run it till the car stops because the engine doesn't function anymore. Or in the case of the microbiome and your cells being the car, then it produces a compound that allows you to stop the car, pull out that old 300,000-mile engine, pick in a brand new engine and keep going. You know, so that's one of the things that the microbiome affords our cells in general, is the ability to fix and regenerate the mitochondria.
And this whole mitochondrial issue is such a theme that's going on in the world of functional medicine, mitochondrial dysfunction. We're talking about the inability to generate energy, and people are becoming more fatigued. They just don't have the energy to function. And what you're sharing with us is that a key piece of regenerating and healing and ensuring optimal functioning of the mitochondria, little batteries that exist in every cell, has to do with our gut microbiome again.
Yeah, absolutely. It all comes back to it. You know, so I mentioned the two important components, the short-chain fatty acids, the butyrate, and then the urolithins. Then there's another one, lactate. And most people know that lactic acid is, of course, produced by numerous members of the mitochondria, of the microbiome. And lactic acid actually feeds the mitochondria and supports the further production of more short-chain fatty acids, more butyrate, and more urolithins. So, you know, and when you produce all of those, you actually increase the diversity of your microbiome, which then means you can produce even more of these compounds. So it's this like amazing continuous loop. Now, another important thing to point out is muscle cells, right? When you look at our tissue, the cell type that has the highest number of mitochondria in the body are muscle cells. Now, you know, it's the largest reservoir of mitochondria in our system. And so there's this interesting muscle microbiome axis where there's a continuous loop that your muscles contain all of these mitochondria, and these mitochondria need to be supported by the microbiome. And so activating skeletal muscles releases something called myokines. And these myokines are compounds that are released by your muscles, and they will reduce systemic inflammation. They increase fatty acid oxidation, meaning the ability to use fatty acids or fat for fuel. They promote more mitochondrial development, and at the same time, they help increase microbiome diversity. So anytime you move your skeletal muscles, like in the case of exercise, you get this activation of reducing inflammation, improve burning fat, increasing the diversity of the microbiome, and then from that diversity of the microbiome, you get more lactic acid, you get more short-chain fatty acids, you get more urolithins, which then goes through and saves more of your mitochondria. So that is, you know, believed in many research circles to be the primary benefit of exercise. The primary benefit of moving your skeletal muscles in exercise is it generates the release of these myokines, which ultimately leads to a healthier microbiome, which ultimately leads to a healthy mitochondria.
Well,
that's where we get the benefit.
It's a whole symbiotic relationship going on.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that feeds a lot of this is dietary polyphenols. So dietary polyphenols ends up producing urolithins, which is one of the three important things. And then the urolithins increase the production of butyrate, and then the butyrate and urolithins improve the production of lactate, and then lactate improves the production of the other two in turn. So it's all this like amazing cyclical functionality that's been so intelligently designed by nature to propagate, you know, longevity and prevent chronic disease. So if we are moving our body, if we're consuming lots of polyphenols, if we're consuming lots of resistant starches and carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates that can be converted to short-chain fatty acids, if we are taking in the right bacteria into our system that's reducing leaky gut, that increases the absorption of these nutrients, that also produces short-chain fatty acids and produces lactic acid, we're just continuously feeding the system that leads to really healthy, fully energetic cells that are more resistant to disease. And it's such a simple yet elegant system designed by nature.
So profound. What would be some recommendations for dietary polyphenols?
You know, red wine is a great source of it. That's one of the benefits of red wine. Dark chocolate, 80-85% or darker, than that. If you can handle the taste, yeah, of it. And of course, assuming it doesn't have a bunch of sugar and stuff in it. And of course, with red wine, you want to be careful because it seems like California reds tend to have higher amounts of the glyphosate in it because they use it so widely. I know I was fortunate enough to be in Tuscany in Italy towards the end of last year, and I know that they don't use any herbicides or pesticides on any of those crops because they're not allowed to by law. It has to be naturally grown. A good, robust Chianti from Tuscany will contain a lot of dietary polyphenols. Of course, grape skin, olive oils, olive skin, all of these things contain high levels of polyphenols that feed this whole loop. So, and then, of course, getting your body moving. And the whole old adage of, like, you know, you need to do 35 minutes of exercise every day and run on the treadmill forever, all that stuff is kind of going out the door. These myokines and all of the beneficial chemical messengers are released even with 4, 5, 7 minutes of movement, you know, and especially if the movement can be somewhat intense, that's great, you know. So if you can, do jumping jacks or jog in place, do some push-ups and just the simple things for 5 to 7 minutes can be enough to stimulate the production of these myokines that then help perpetuate this loop of health and longevity.
It's just so exciting, and it all starts from our conversation about working with these spore biotics as a critical piece of this puzzle that we have been explaining, which is why I love having these conversations, why I'm very excited about the spore biotics, because it's providing one of the pieces of this very complex puzzle that accomplishes so many things in our body for our health. You know, it's like just one product can achieve healing our gut, repairing our gut, supporting our mitochondria, making antioxidants, making these short chain fatty acids, getting rid of the pathogenic microbes. I mean, it's just all the same product, the same gut guys, as I like to call them, are just fulfilling all these key functions.
Yeah, you know, and it's really amazing when you think about it. And nature has designed these strains to do that for us. You know, we've essentially outsourced a lot of those functions to these bacteria. We can't do them ourselves. We don't have any system in our gut to heal our own leaky gut. Right, it's not like our body can turn on, you know, matrix metalloproteinases, which are the fancy things that can help you heal your skin if you get cut. But we don't have that kind of thing for healing our leakiness in our gut. But we've outsourced that capability to these types of bacteria, and we just have to be smart enough to be able to put these bacteria back into our system, and they'll go to work for us and do all these amazing things.
Well, this is such a wonderful conversation. I want people to really check out the spore biotics. I actually, in order to support everyone and introduce people to the Mega Spore Biotics, which is the practitioner formula, it's a stronger formula, right? Because it's got 4 strains.
Right.
That is not usually found in it. So if you go to my website, people go to my website, What Women Must Know, and go to my online store there, I actually have a 15% discount on these products. So you can try them at a discounted rate and start taking them, because I am putting everybody on these products, everybody I can find who are open to it. You know, this is like core. I'm always looking, and I think you mentioned this one time, Karen, that the spore biotics are the root cause of the root cause.
Exactly, yeah. They attack the root cause of the root cause. And one of the things that I've loved about functional medicine is it's all about finding the root cause of problems rather than treating symptomology. And at the end of the day, we're now at the level where we can find the root cause of the root cause. You know, we know, for example, that inflammation will drive autoimmune disease. We know, for example, inflammation can drive the formation of cancer cells or heart disease. And in allopathic medicine, we're not doing much to treat that inflammation. But in functional medicine, practitioners and doctors are working hard to treat that inflammation. But then this goes even further to show where the inflammation comes from. And a lot of that comes from the gut, and a lot of that comes from the leakiness of the gut and toxins leaking in from the lumen of the gut into the circulatory system and setting off this cascade of inflammatory processes that occur. And so we're going way back to the beginning and stopping that process before it starts. And the beauty of it is people will say, well, what if my gut is already leaky and I've gone through a lot of inflammation, a lot of disease conditions? Well, you know, most of the chronic conditions we see are reversible to some degree, if not all of it, you know, because the body can heal. And that comes back to what you were saying right at the beginning, is that if you put the body in its natural state, it can heal almost anything that's wrong with it, you know, and that's where we see the magic of nature, is that one of the biggest hindrances to the body healing itself is chronic inflammation. And if chronic inflammation is chronic, meaning it's always present, we will never get into the healing state. And so our job, you know, my passion is figuring out how do we stop that chronic inflammation and let the body heal.
Well, here we have such a key to our healing process, the sporebiotics. So, Karen Christian, thank you so much for being with us today. As always, you're such an inspiration, and I'm sure everybody is inspired, and there's some simple solutions. So that's why I really love talking about the sporebiotics. And if people go to my website, which, by the way, is whatwomenmustknow.com, they can pick up a bottle and try it, and you'll be amazed at what's happening. So thank you again for your time, your research, and your passion to share this message, Karen. I certainly greatly appreciate what you're doing in this world, so thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining me today, and know that there are always answers, always solutions to bring you back to optimal health. And until next time, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.